And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning, 4 minutes past 9, 16th of October 2025. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show this Thursday. How are you all keeping? I hope you're very well. And we're looking forward to having you on board for the next 3 hours. We've got lots coming up throughout the course of the 3 hours. If you don't normally listen to the programme, we keep you up to date with everything that's happening locally here, focused on the Northwest. We talk about stuff they're not going to be talking about down in Dublin. Don't worry about that. But we also keep you up to date with what's happening around the country and beyond, with lots and lots of guests joining us throughout the course of the morning. Of course, too, we're allowed to, or we're able to, focus on issues that are important to you, be it a local organisation, a local group, whatever it might be. We'll have an interview or two along those lines coming up over the course of the next 3 hours. And also, it's your opportunity to get your point of view out there. You know, we live in a democracy and you've got your own local radio station and your own show dedicated to you. So you can get involved, join the conversation, start the conversation. And this is the number. It might be very familiar to you. Maybe you've never used it before, though. Use it for the first time today. 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. Just send your comments in to us, or indeed your requests. We play some requests after 10 o'clock as well, by the way. So if you've got someone in your life celebrating something special, get in touch with us in that regard as well. We're happy to do that for you. You can also give us a call on 07491 25000. Caroline always taking your calls today. And if you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. And we enjoy a load of loyal listeners as well that listen to the podcast, or indeed those that work nights or struggle to get to sleep. They listen overnight. You're very important to us as well. Thank you very much for tuning in. And your comments are very welcome as well to 086 60 25000. We can pick them up for the next live show, or email comments@highlandradio.com. The front of the Donegal news this morning is gridlock. It's traffic. Workers work on an active travel project on one of Letterkenny's busiest roads, which will see the installation of new cycle paths and pavements, but at the expense of removing turning lanes for vehicles, could take between, wait for it, 9 and 12 months to complete. Traffic came to a standstill for long periods this week on the section between the roundabout at Letterkenny University Hospital and the Knocknamona roundabout on the R291 Kilmacrennan Road. This prompted considerable reaction from motorists, and concern has been expressed that emergency service vehicles could be restricted from getting through to Letterkenny University Hospital. So there's more on the front of an inside the paper on that story as well. The Tyrconnell Tribune has space for the traffic delays, but their main story is numbers of councillors have expressed serious concern over the council's plan to seek a 5% increase in commercial rates for 2026. Councillors say they've been told there is a gap of €20 million to be bridged in the revenue budget for next year. The issue is out there for discussion, and it's suggested that targeting small enterprises to pay more when they are generating less income is the wrong way to go, and it is simply unacceptable. Councillors contacted by the Tribune said there is no way SMEs can be asked for another 5% on rates in a year. That's been challenging for many to keep their premises open. Some have cut staffing levels and others are working reduced hours to manage what they claim is a real crisis. Now, this is your platform. Are you a small and medium enterprise in Donegal? How could you face or absorb a 5% rates increase? If you want to, get your voice and get your message out there now as the decision is being made. Let us know. Maybe it could be the difference between you being in business or out of business, or maybe it could be the difference between you employing 12 people or 10. Give us a sense of what a 5% rates increase might mean to your business, wherever you are across County Donegal. 086 60 25000. The Derry News: it has been a complete headache. A Derry businesswoman has spoken about the absolute stress she has experienced due to the ongoing closure of Pump Street in the city centre's Cathedral Quarter. "It's been a complete headache," said Michelle Brace, owner of the Blonde Lane Hair Salon. "I had to cancel clients' appointments all last week because we were repeatedly told our electricity was going to be off all day, only to discover that wasn't the case and it actually remained on. Pump Street has been cordoned off to prevent vehicular access since the partial collapse of the derelict former Convent of Mercy building on Sunday, October 5th. Very disruptive to business. Talking about disruptions to business. On to the Nationals now. And Catherine Connolly has a healthy lead in the presidential election. The latest poll, which is accurate to around about 2%, has her on 38%. Heather Humphreys is trailing at 20%, so Catherine Connolly's a 2-1 lead over Heather Humphreys at the moment. Jim Gavin, interestingly, by the way, even though he doesn't have an active campaign, he's still on the ballot. He's got a 5% approval rating. Will not vote is at 12%. And those that will spoil the vote is at 6%. Obviously, there's a big campaign online for people to spoil the vote. 18% of people don't know. Now, whoever you choose to vote for, whether it's Heather Humphreys or Catherine Connolly, the only way either gets elected is if you actually go out and vote. It's a lot to ask, I suppose, if you're not really that interested, but many of you may well be, but you're going to have to get out and vote in a little over a week. But reading on here, Catherine Connolly holds a commanding lead in the presidential election with just over a week to go before votes are cast, according to the latest Irish Times Ipsos BNA opinion poll. The poll finds that Ms Connolly on 38% has almost double the support of her nearest rival, Fine Gael's Heather Humphreys on 20%. Support for the Fianna Fáil candidate Jim Gavin, who stopped his presidential campaign last week but is still on the ballot paper, is just 5%. And I think it's interesting, and it might be a little bit of a model for future politicians to take on, in that, you know, what certain sections of the media or certain maybe, you know, centre or right minded journalists, what they might think is a controversy is not necessarily a controversy amongst the wider Irish people. And I think really, and I think particularly with Catherine Connolly, because some of the stories that they've tried to stick on her really aren't issues that the Irish public see as an issue, or they're content with her answer. And I think it really talks to maybe a little bit of a gap between maybe the media and general political bubble in Dublin, and really what Irish people think and what bothers them and what doesn't bother them. And I think that's why Catherine Connolly's retained such a strong lead, because really the controversies that they've tried to put on her haven't really been, I don't think, for most people, controversies at all. But I can imagine at times, you know, the papers thought, right, we've got her now. This is going to really stick. But it doesn't. And it hasn't. So if a Heather Humphreys is going to come through, she is going to need a miracle, because polls are polls, right? And the only poll that matters is voting day. But it's very hard to bridge an 18% gap when there's no real momentum there. You know, there's no momentum for Catherine Connolly to stumble, it seems. And there's no real momentum for for Heather Humphreys to double her vote. So, and as well as that, transfers on an issue as such now with Jim Gavin down at 5%. So Catherine Connolly in good shape. But whether you want Ms. Humphreys or Ms. Connolly to win, you have to vote. Shocking story out of Dublin yesterday, covered in all the papers. I'm going to take it from the Irish Independent. And detectives are investigating if a row over food led to a 17-year-old being stabbed to death in an emergency care facility in Dublin. The victim, an international protection applicant, suffered stab wounds to the head and chest during the attack at the Grantonwood apartment complex in Donaghmede yesterday morning. Detectives were waiting last night to interview another teenager in relation to the attack. He was arrested at the scene after being pepper sprayed by Gardaí. The male juvenile, who's also an asylum seeker, was arrested but was taken to hospital before he was formally detained. He remained in a medical facility last night being treated for non-life-threatening injuries. Now, this property where the incident happened, it's a unit used by TUSLA, the Child and Family Agency, as emergency accommodation to house four separated international protection applicants. So these are people who have come here. They're youths, but they don't have a family. First responders helped a number of other juveniles and adults who works there, I believe, while a female worker, as I said there, was taken to hospital. It's believed the woman suffered superficial wounds while trying to intervene in a row. Gardaí have used the language, you know, when you can read between the lines, they're not looking for anyone else. They are following a definite line of inquiry, and there's no wider threat to the wider public. So presumably they'll be interviewing the person shortly who is in hospital. Now, as if traffic wasn't bad enough in Letterkenny, there is a car broken down on the roundabout at Optum, which is causing delays into Letterkenny this morning. Which roundabout is that, Caroline? Do we know which one is the Optum one? Just the one below us here? So that's not Knocknamona roundabout, is it? I think it is, isn't it? Yeah, they've all got different blooming names. People call them different things. So we've just been hearing on the news there about the need for yellow boxes. Though I think it was former councillor John O'Donnell sought to have yellow boxes placed on that roundabout a couple of years ago, and he was told it couldn't happen. It would have to happen, and there'd have to be traffic studies and all this kind of stuff because it's a TII road, and it's not just a case of the council saying, yeah, let's put yellow boxes there. It was rejected at that time, so I don't know what's going to change in the next couple of years. But if things weren't bad enough, there's a car broken down, exacerbating the problem. Probably burnt out the clutch coming up the hill. The Irish Farmers Journal this morning: milk processors take another 2.5% off prices. The base price on offer for September milk are down another 2.5 pence per litre at both Lakeland Dairies and Dale Farm, leaving those prices 6 to 7 pence per litre below what was being paid at the start of the year and at their lowest point since May 2024. In the case of Lakeland Dairies, it will pay for September milk from a base price of 35.8 pence per litre to include its 0.5% sustainable payment. Dale Farm followed suit and also took price down by 2.5 pence. Is it pence or percent? What's P? Leaving the base at 36.3 per litre. That price includes its 0.3p loyalty bonus and is believed... dairy farmers out there, not that there's that many up in this part of the world. Is it P? What are they talking about reducing it by P? I probably should know that. I'll Google it. I would have thought it was cent. Is that not about what's being paid for a litre? In the Sun, Simon Harris, he yesterday comfortably survived a confidence vote in the Dáil as Aintu tried to force him to resign over his handling of the spinal surgery waitlist scandal. These votes of no confidence, I suppose they're purposeful in that they sort of have the conversation out there, but they're kind of frequent now and they don't really even get too much media coverage, if the truth be told. But the way the numbers are in the Dáil, unless it's something that those that support the government are peed off about, they will always survive them. And it's the same with Councillor Charles Ward's motion yesterday, the government's counter-motion to effectively pat itself on the back for what it's achieving with the DCB scheme. They will always be successful because they have the numbers. But anyway, Simon Harris survived the vote of no confidence in the Dáil as Aintu tried to force him to resign, that over the handling of the spinal surgery waitlist scandal. But families whose children suffered waiting for scoliosis and spina bifida operations last night welcomed the cross-party support aired by TDs during the Dáil debate for a public inquiry into the failings at Children's Health Ireland. Aintu leader Pádraig Tobin this week announced his plan to table a motion of no confidence in the Taoiseach next week. On to the Daily Mirror this morning. And Israel is warned of devastating consequences if Hamas does not disarm, as was demanded in the peace deal. A row over the identity of a body returned to Israel has also threatened to shatter the fragile peace agreement. Hamas handed over the remains of an unknown Gazan in place of one of the kidnapped Israeli security officials claim. Now, the complication Hamas is claiming is that the remaining 19 bodies, because they handed two more over overnight, they're either under rubble or under bombs that haven't fully exploded and what have you. And they've said now that... there's no more bodies to be had. They can't find any more of the bodies. But obviously they are still armed because you've seen the images yourself there. But it's interesting that internationally Israel's been asked to have patience in relation to the return of those bodies. What are you like at taking your annual leave if you're lucky enough to have a job? I mean, everyone has, you know, different levels of annual leave, some none, depending on the contract you're on. But do you take your annual leave? Are you made feel guilty for taking your annual leave? Are you just really, do you feel that you can't take your annual leave because you're so busy? Or what's what? What is the story there? Because a third of us don't take full holidays. Now, I'm not saying I'm any hero or whatever, but I've got quite a few days backed up and I have to take a couple of days next week because there's lots of people seem to be delaying taking their holidays. And it's not that anyone has anything to do. We're just a hardworking bunch here. But forget the weather. Irish workers have found an even better reason not to go on holiday. They're simply too busy not taking their annual leave. More than a third of workers are leaving days unused, according to the 2025 annual leave report by FRS Recruitment. with men significantly less likely than women to take their full entitlement. However, the 35% of people with leave remaining last year represents an overall improvement on 2023, when 42% of workers admitted to failed to take all their time off due to them. Now, some companies will allow you to carry them on, others won't. But why aren't you taking your days off? Is it because, you know, as I say, you're too hardworking, you're too loyal? Are you made feel guilty? Are the days that you're potentially, they want you to take off, the quiet days, no good to you, and the busy days, a weekend or something like that, you kind of can't take them off? Or maybe you're charged with organising who's covering you. I'm just interested as to why a third of us don't take the time off. Or maybe it's not worth it because you have to catch up so much when you return. I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting number. I thought it was a high number. I thought some of the people I know that aren't great at taking annual leave, I thought they were somewhat unique, but one in three of us don't. There's one other thing I wanted to mention. Let me see if I can grab the paper. Just give us a sec. Oh, 1 minute now. Where are you? Ah, here we are. No, that's the wrong one. I can come back to it. Yeah. No, I'll have to come back to it. It's about the level of income in Donegal, because it was the CSO released figures. I think it was on Friday, and I didn't get my hands on them, or I didn't get to mention them, and I just want to read it out. The Donegal News is covering it today as well. It was on our news bulletins, but as I say, I didn't get to cover it on this programme. And it really lays bare the level of deprivation and low incomes that we have here in County Donegal. So I'll come back to that after a break or a little later on in the programme, because as I say, we recognise that on this programme, because we cover a lot of stuff that would make it hard not to, but also in how we deal with certain subjects. But it would seem that the way society is set up doesn't really recognise that. So I'll read those figures out for you a little later on in the show. So as you would know, yesterday we were speaking to 100% Redress TD Deputy Charles Ward. He had a motion down where he effectively was going to use his time to lay bare what he believed was the flaws of the DCB scheme, the mishandling of it, etc., etc., the people being left behind, all the issues we cover here on this show all of the time. There was a counter motion by government, which really effectively then places that on the Dáil record, whereby they were saying, you know, they're doing really well. It's a scheme that can be, you know, enhanced going forward. 3,000 people are working through the scheme and all that kind of stuff as well, right? So, listen, the government believe this is a good scheme. But just to let you know how people voted, because that's really quite critical, isn't it? Fianna Fáil's Pat the Cope Gallagher, he voted with the government, effectively endorsing the scheme, as did Junior Minister Charlie McConnell. He also voted, as you can imagine, with the government endorsing the scheme as a good scheme and a scheme that's making good progress, etc., etc. The Sinn Féin TDs voted against, as of course it was Charles Ward's motion. So of our five, one proposed the original motion, two voted for the government counter motion, Pat the Cope Gallagher and Charlie McConnell, effectively saying that the motion set out that the scheme was a good scheme, and two against. Namely, Pearse Doherty, Pádraig McLaughlin, just to get that on the record on the programme here, because a few people were asking, you see. And it is something we covered on the show yesterday. Ronan joins us now. Ronan from the We Greenway Initiative. Good morning, Ronan.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you for joining us. I have in front of me an advert or a GIF or whatever you might call it. Wearing a high visibility vest, a reflective belt or fluorescent clothing increases your visibility. Be bright, wear bright and arrive alive. And this is a county council. Message getting out there. The Gardaí say it too as well. Yeah. I presume you see it as a worthwhile message, do you, Ronan?
Well, I think the message underpinning it, that we should all be road aware and we should all be aware of all our road users, I think that's to be commended. But I do have reservations about the focus and the emphasis on high vis. And it would be really good to know what evidence local authorities and the guards in particular base this messaging around, because it's my experience that that's not the case. And if you talk to other, cycling advocates or organisations who want to make our infrastructure, particularly our roads, safe for all road users, they would have reservations about this focus on high vis. So, for example, I was talking to your producer earlier. I saw an incident in Kerry a couple of days ago when a woman wearing a high-vis vest on a national road off the main carriageway was almost struck by a lorry going past her because he was veering on the road and wasn't paying attention to what was going on in front of him. And I think that's probably a greater risk to all road users along with speed than people not being seen from a distance.
Yeah, but they're both a problem, aren't they? Obviously, if you're out on the road, you want cars have lights, not just to be seen, but also not just to see, but also to be seen. So, you know, walkers, cyclists, they wear their high vis, they follow the rules of the road. Motorists shouldn't be speeding, they should be aware, and they follow the rules of the road. It's not one or other, is it? It's both.
It is a mixture, but the big merely speed.
All right, I don't know if you can move position, Ronan, because I'm losing you on the line there. You're cutting in and out. If you could just move position maybe, Ronan. So what were you about to say there, or what did you say?
I was just saying that if you in Donegal this week, there was a court case where there was a man before the courts for driving at 160 kilometres an hour on a 100k an hour road in Kilmacrenan. And the defence argument, which was accepted by the judge, was that because they wanted the offence downgraded from dangerous driving to careless driving, was that it was happening at night time and there was no one about. That was the defence of defence, and it was accepted. And that kind of philosophy and logic really underpins what is wrong with society at the moment when it comes to road fatalities and how people should interact with our infrastructure. So over
31%. But the reality is, it is always the driver or the motorist that has the most. It's always the driver or the motorist, isn't it, that has the most attention on them. They're normally blamed. That's where the majority of the road safety message goes. That's where the rules and regulations are. It's the motorist. It's not the pedestrian. Pedestrians seem to be able to do whatever they like with. When was the last time you could quote a court case of a pedestrian causing a collision, for an example?
Yeah, I understand that, and I see where people come from when they make this case. But there is, you know, if a human gets behind the wheel of a motorized vehicle, they have a responsibility that is absent from someone who's out walking on a road or out on a footpath.
Roland, just
that is the difference, and there's laws for that.
I seem to recall us talking before, did we? You're an anti-high-viser, are you?
Well, I'm not an anti-high-viser.
But you don't wear one.
I'm pro. I don't wear one anymore. Yeah. I used to wear one. I worked in Dublin for 19 years, and for the first 10 years of that existence, I wore a high-vis jacket going to and from work.
Yeah.
And in that period, I was struck 3 times by motorists.
So if you go out cycling or walking at night, you don't wear high-vis? Like, that's a choice you make. I can't remember the logic. Does it have reflectors and stuff on it?
No, generally not.
Okay, so give us the logic of that again. I can't remember. It's years since we spoke, but I just seem to remember the line of the conversation.
It really goes back to all road users and the kind of society that we want to have. So if you ask someone, you know, a parent, they don't let their kid walk or cycle to school because it's too dangerous. Well, why is it too dangerous? It's too dangerous because they believe that humans and vehicles are driving too fast and may kill their children. So the solution to that is not that the child wears a high-vis. The solution to that is that that the person driving the vehicle slows down and is more attentive on the roads.
We see this
in all the country.
It's a very English-speaking... Of course, but like I get where you're coming from, and I'm starting to feel the same level of exacerbation as I did when we first talked like, it's, I still maintain, yeah, I get where you're coming from. And, you know, the motorist, the vehicle, the one ton, the 10 ton thing is the thing that's going to cause the damage. But you have to give yourself the best chance of avoiding bad drivers or even good drivers by wearing high vis so people can, people know that you're there, Ronan, and can avoid you, whether going at a healthy speed, sorry, not a healthy speed, a slow speed or a fast speed.
There is very little evidence to support this general view, but what evidence does exist will say that it is more important to wear bright clothing during the day. Mm. But at nighttime, high-vis is not making any difference. There's no empirical evidence to support.
But my eyes are the evidence, Ronan.
Well, we'll make a difference with slower vehicles.
Yeah, but the evidence is my eyes. The cars, tractors, trailers, like, say, for instance, if you're towing a trailer, you know, if the trailer obscures the backlights of your car, right, you have to put a tailgate on that trailer. Sorry, you know, like a light board. Correct. On that trailer so that you can see it. You can see what it's going to do. You know, my eyes know that sometimes you come up on people in wet weather. Someone doesn't dip their lights. Yes, that's the blame of another motorist. And your next thing you're on someone who's walking on the road in dark clothing, and you nearly clean them out of it. But you would have a better chance of seeing them if they were wearing bright, high-vis, reflective-type clothing, Ronan. That's my eyes. I don't need a study in relation to that, do I?
Well, I mean, the flip side of that is if I was driving slower and I came across something wearing dark clothing, I could probably avoid them easily. Rather than if I was driving at a faster speed. And again, I go back, you know, again, over 30% of road fatalities at the moment on Irish roads, north and south, are people who are walking or cycling, humans walking or cycling.
Yeah.
And they're being killed by humans who are primarily driving.
But also, but the one factor is that you're not considering in this as well is the infrastructure. It's our infrastructure as well,
yeah,
whereby, you know, we're having to get about in our different ways of doing so on roads that really aren't designed for it, whether you're wearing high vis or not. You're in a car, a Jeep, a lorry, going fast or slow. You know, we're having to share an infrastructure that's not built for that. So surely in the interim, until such time and that's ever fixed, if it ever is, cars have lights, drivers drive slow, cyclists and walkers wear high vis and carry a light so we can all blum and see each other.
Yeah, I think everyone has a part to play, but don't forget that roads existed before motorized traffic existed, and people were walking and on horseback and on bicycles and pulling a cart long before motorized traffic came.
It's just a bizarre, Ronan. It's a bizarre protest. It's a bizarre protest. I'm calling it a protest, right? I'm not, you know what I mean. But it's to sort of say, right, cars are driving too fast, motorists are poor, I'm not going to wear high-vis, you know. But anyway, Michael McClafferty is a councillor who joins us. Michael, you're listening to Ronan there. He says there's no evidence that high-vis is effective, and it's really down to motorists.
I don't agree with that, Greg, to be quite honest with you. I agree with the point you're making yourself there, and with all respect to Ronan, everybody needs to be out on the road, be safely, clearly seen, all the rest, wearing a high-vis, wearing an armband, wearing a light, headlights or flash lamp, whatever you want to make, what you give everybody the chance. Obviously, accordingly, then the other side of it, the motorist always needs to drive with due care. But driving with due care, as you touched on yourself, Greg, the infrastructure as well, yes, needs huge improvements everywhere throughout our county, throughout our country. But at the same time, Greg, we need to be fair to each other here. Give each other a chance. It's not fair pushing it all onto the motorist or this mad idea of not wearing a high-vis vest, all this kind of stuff. It's been highlighted to me in recent days there, as I said to Caroline there, about walkers out. I've seen them myself as well, to be fair, because I'm on the road no more than yourself, all hours, late, early mornings, whatever. There'll be walkers out, there'll be runners out, there'll be occasionally cyclists out, which I've not seen at all against cyclists, but at times I've seen them recently. Now, cyclists alone, not in bunches. To be fair, the ones in bunches are well catered for, they're well geared out. But more so, the solo, the individual cyclist may or may not, and many cases I've come across there, does not have a high-vis vest, first of all, or an armband. They have a rear light and a front light, all right. But as I said to Bronwyn there, the more light off a channel, to be fair. And you have to judge this against them, Greg, possibly. As you see yourself, another car meeting you, heavy rain, different conditions, as I've come across, cyclists having out in torrential rain as well, caught out, whatever. the way it's turned out. But particularly, I think focusing on the walkers and the runners, they need to be let up, Craig.
Ronan,
they need to have their high visor on.
Tell him why you think
definitely,
he's wrong.
100%.
Ronan,
well, it's not a case of being wrong or right. I mean, I hear this argument. I've been listening to this argument from local councillors all across Ireland, in Kerry, Donegal, Derry, Dublin. I've heard the same argument for 20, 25 years, that really people who are not in motorised vehicles need to be lit up like Christmas trees, because people in motorised vehicles don't want to slow down to cater for other people who want to be road users. And that's really the crux of it. I mean, Donegal, the roads in Donegal, like in other counties, I didn't interrupt you, councillor. The roads in Donegal, like all other counties, are not fit for purpose in many cases. We have twisty rural roads. We have houses and businesses in the back of beyond. So our roads, our local roads and our regional roads, and in proportion to say roads, equivalent roads on the continent, are much busier. That is an issue as well. So you could be on roads in France, Belgium, Italy, in similar areas, and you won't see a driver.
Do you drive?
I do, yes.
Have you never had a near miss with a walker in dark clothing? Hello? Ronan? Sorry, your lines.
Why that's the case.
No, Ronan, sorry, your phone cut out again. I just wanted to ask you the question again. Have you ever had a near miss as a driver with someone walking or cycling in dark clothing?
No.
Really?
No, never. Never.
Okay. Will you stick by your guns? I admire that, but beggars belief. And if you had kids, would you encourage them to wear high vis? I hate bringing kids into it, right? Because it feels like I'm trying to paint you into a corner, but I'm not. I'm actually really genuinely just trying to get an insight into how committed to this you are.
Well, I mean, I don't have children. So I have neighbours and friends who all have children, and it's been a mixture. Some of them have sent their kids off on foot wearing high-vis in the morning. Some of them don't do that. Some of them would take my philosophy and say, well, you know, why should a child have to be lit up like a Christmas tree just to go about their daily business?
Okay, Michael, Councillor.
I mean, we have a major issue. The councillor is correct about infrastructure.
Yeah. Okay, go on, councillor. You come back in there.
The councillor is correct. As I said, the councillor is correct about infrastructure. But if I'm out during the daytime driving, then I should be paying attention to the road. And there will be a lot of your listeners who like to walk to their destination for wherever they're going.
Yeah.
If they can come on and they'll tell you about the number of drivers they can see on a daily basis who are not attentive.
What's your feeling about road signs, traffic lights, road markings? Are you in favour of them?
Yes.
Okay. Councillor McClafferty, did you want to come back there? I do need to move on, though.
Yeah. Well, quickly, Greg, and with all respect to Ronan's points here, first of all, I have never once suggested, or any of my colleagues, to the best of my knowledge, have suggested people go out lit up like Christmas trees. That's a stretch and an exaggeration of the imagination.
He doesn't mean that.
I know,
but
Greg, this is serious. I know what he means, but there's a serious matter, like, to be fair. For the record, Greg, and I can categorically state this for the record, I almost had a close shave one morning. One of my own neighbours. He was out running. I was driving. He had no high vis on. No, he was dressed in dark clothes. He literally fell basically a matter of a couple of feet away from me. Okay, I was observing. I was able to stop, but I got the fright of my life. He had nothing on, running dark.
All right. Okay.
Out dark in the morning. Like,
all right, councillor.
So that's where I see.
Yeah, I get you. I know what you're on about. Councillor Michael McClafferty, thank you. Ronan, you're a cyclist as well. Just finally, where do you believe your place on the road is as a cyclist? Do you stay in the left? Do you use cycle lanes? If you want to be in the middle of the road, are you in the middle of the road? Because, you know, as you say, well, as you sort of indicated that, you know, the road's yours as much as this. So how do you behave as a cyclist?
Well, I cycle defensively, and I cycle to the road conditions and to what's going on around me. So sometimes I could be slightly out from the left because the road may be poor. It may be gatored. There could be potholes. if there's a cycle lane available, I'll use the cycle lane. Sometimes I won't use the cycle lane if it's not being maintained. And again, that's another issue that we have, that where cycling infrastructure does exist. Sometimes it's not maintained, particularly in autumn months when leaves are falling. And if I'm on a windy country road, I may sit further out because I'm also someone who drives, that I know that person may see me better if I'm further out and not hogging a hedge line.
All right, okay.
So it really depends on the road conditions.
All right, Ronan, thank you for that. That's Ronan there. That's his views. Councillor Michael McClafferty also joined us. Interested in your points of view, 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts. Right, lots of you interested in that last conversation there. Let's get to some of those comments. As there is a month and a half gone, I live in an area, people walking, running and cycling and all well out in the road. They can't get in as no hedges, verges, briar, etc. cut. That's in a lot of places. Yeah, too, that's another issue, isn't it? Forcing other road users out into the road. Another caller says, anyone out without high vis, etc. at night should be penalised like any other person that breaks the law on the road. But Ronan, very stuck in his views there. Tell that man to wake up. Any man who doesn't wear high visibility is simply not wise and doesn't deserve air time. Well, my philosophy is you know, people's opinions are important, whether you fully agree with them or not. The drivers are watching their mobile phones. I see HGV drivers on phones regularly. Another caller says, do you think cyclists should be insured on the road? If they have car insurance, they could have an option for bicycles if the insurance companies could have this option. Another here was driving in Donegal at the weekend where 8 cyclists had someone at junction stopping traffic so they didn't have to stop. They were allowed out in front of cars, which seemed crazy. The cars then are trying to pass them, cyclists who do not follow the rules of the road. A stop sign means stop for everyone on the road. Now, I don't know, that sounds like an organised event with stewards and what have you, so I'm not sure if they just said, right, it's a minor inconvenience, no one will mind, or they had permission. I'm not sure how that works. Not wearing a high-vis is like not having the lights on in your car. Yeah, indeed. And I mean, the way I would view that, and I think the way you can make sort of a better comparison is that, you know, in the as it starts to get brighter, as it starts to get dark, you see cars without lights on. They can see. They can see what's happening, but they're harder to see for other motorists. And that's really kind of similar. You know, you want to be seen, don't you? It's a very poor decision not to wear high vis on roads while walking or cycling. But Ronan says he knows people that that make the conscious decision to send their children out without high vis as well. At night, bright clothes don't work. You need to have high vis. I'm a cyclist. I always wear my high vis. It's too dangerous for people not wearing high vis at night. Fair play, Greg. Those walking on the roads think they're royalty, can't step in or even make eye contact. The man you're speaking to right now is a prime example of why people get hurt. Hi, Greg. I appreciate everyone is entitled to their opinion, but as regards Ronan's comments on high vis, I have to disagree. If he's looking for stats on if high visibility works, we need only refer to collisions where the drivers have said, I didn't see them. Drivers can't drive the speed limit or below and still cause serious injury, or they can, sorry, if they don't see somebody or something. People can only react to what they can see. People need to be seen. So for the sake of a high visibility vest, which are freely given at local Garda stations, I'd rather have it than not have it. But Roland makes a conscious decision not to wear it. And he believes that he walks responsibly, obviously not because he's not wearing high vis, but that the motorist needs to be keeping an eye out for him. Hi, Greg. I met a lady walking outside Dunfanaghy this morning at 7:30 a.m. wearing a black coat. No high-vis. That comes in from John. Ask Ronan, does he wear his seatbelt while driving or use a helmet when cycling? Another, safety rules and guidelines apply to all road users, drivers, cyclists and pedestrians. High-vis stuff is essential. And another, Greg, you cannot control every driver in this country as regards what speed they drive. You can try and ensure that everyone wears a high-vis when they're out and about. You can even get high-vis vests free of charge. I do a bit of cycling just for exercise and I wouldn't leave the house without a high-vis even during the day. I wonder, does he wear a helmet when he's cycling? I cannot understand his argument at all. But listen, the bottom line is that, and this is a very, very important road safety message as well. Ronan's opinion is Ronan's opinion, but we know that if you are out and about cycling or walking, you need to wear a high vis because that's what gives motorists the best opportunity to see you, carry a light. You know, I certainly wouldn't want to, in any conversation, water down the importance of that message. you know, my boys would not be allowed on the road without high-vis on if they were so inclined, right? So I'm very, very strong on that, by the way. Okay, back with the weather after these. On the issue of the roads again, hi, Greg, was out walking last night, met a group of two adults and two children, about 5 and 7, walking at the Mount Errigal Hotel. None of them had high-vis on. Another here, if we're to follow Ronan's logic, there's no need for high-vis in construction and other industries either. Another listener says, hi, Greg, what about these slow drivers who do 30 or 40 kilometres per hour in an 80 zone? 3 or 4 driving parallel, holding back rows of traffic on a two-lane road, causing a gridlock on Sundays. Never a traffic guarder to tell them to move on. And otherwise, Ronan telling people to risk their lives by walking or cycling at night while trying to remain unseen. I see this regularly, and it's basically attempted suicide. If you can't be seen, then how on earth can the motorists avoid you? Is he willing to take responsibility for people who follow his advice and get injured or killed? But you see, I can't speak for Ronan. Ronan's gone now, but listening to what he said is he would still put the blame at the motorist for not seeing the walker. And I don't think he's not going to shift on that opinion. But again, just to reiterate, if you're out and about, you know, you have to be safe, you have to be seen, you have to wear high vis and a light and make sure your bike lights are on. And also in a car, you have to make sure your headlights are working, your dips are working, that you have your lights on when you should have them on. You know, lorry drivers, they're restricted to certain speed limits as well. They've got tachographs to make sure that they don't exceed them for the most part. Buses the same, you know, tractors. We all have rules to follow. A caller says a lot of walkers and runners cycle on the roads, no high vis. But again, not wishing to condone it or promote it because that would be dangerous. But if you are a person like Ronan who makes a conscious decision not to wear it, please text us 086 60 25,000. You don't have to come on. So I just wanted to reference these figures that show that Donegal's record records highest poverty levels in the state. As I say, we covered it on the news here, but it just didn't align with when we were on air for this show. And I often reference this, you know, when we talk about averages, and I always say, well, Donegal's going to be worse here. And these stats seem to play that out. Donegal has recorded the highest rates of people living on low incomes in the state. New data from the CSO shows 25% of us had an equivalent net administrative income below the low income threshold, more than double the rate in County Kildare. Within Donegal, the Carndonagh local electoral area recorded the highest rate of low income in the country, highlighting the deepening economic divide across the region. So of all of the country, according to these statistics, if you're in the Carndonagh local electoral area, you have the lowest income. And you would know that because you live it every day. You don't need me to say it. Now, that's obviously a percentage. There are still people in the Carndonagh area that are doing better. Don't get me wrong. So there you go. That just is absolutely categoric. You can't dispute that. We have the highest poverty levels in the state. 25% of us had an equivalent net administrative income below the low income threshold. And in Carndonagh, it had the lowest of people below the low income threshold in the whole country, which is shocking from county to county, and not only from county to county, but from within the county. That affects businesses too, because that the level of disposable income is then determines how much people can spend. And staying with businesses, because we see on the front of the Tyrconnell Tribune conversation kite flying about a 5% increase in commercial rates. A caller says, Greg, I'm a small businessman in Inishowen. Once again, the small business is being pushed into higher rates. We're struggling to stay open and keep people employed. Yet the council are proposing higher rates. What are the council doing to make cuts to their budget? Small businesses can't be continued to be relied upon as the only people taking the pain. Most officials have had continued pay rises in the last year. Well, all of them have, by the way. The national pay agreement means that all public employees get pay raises. Not contradicting you, I'm backing you up in that point of view. Yeah, that's an interesting point of view as well. Is there an opportunity to cut costs rather than increase rates? Back with more after the news and obituary notices.